and welcome back to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson, and I've lost my mind.
And I'm Jason Moito, so I'm barely holding on to sanity.
And he's gonna lose it by the end of this episode, because we're talking about Kabbalah! Boom!
That's why I'm going nut crazy?
It's so fascinating.
That's great.
It's really fascinating.
So, give me the extremely watered-down, easy SparkNotes version.
No, that's not how it works, son. There is none. You can't.
All right, I'm just going to look in that direction for the next hour and
20
minutes.
Hour or so, yeah.
I'll let you go.
All right. Well, just a quick reminder. Last week, we talked about hardly anything at all.
Right. We talked about the...
The Scottish Wizard King.
And the introduction to the Secret Society of the Golden Dawn.
Kind of a sketch of the history of the Golden Dawn. And then, yes, the rites of initiation. The take one from the normie realm into the super special realm.
Cool. And then you get a name.
And of course, you get a new handshake, you get a secret word, you get a secret way of walking, you get a secret something else.
It's the four, remember? Mm-hmm. It's four.
And then a password to get in. Like a Wi-Fi password.
Yeah.
If instead of Wi-Fi, it's a creepy old temple full of rich old people. Well, they're not all old. Let's be honest.
And they're not all rich.
Some of them aren't.
I'm pretty sure most
pretty
of them are
pretty sure
rich.
Many, yeah. If not all of them, are rich.
All right, fair enough.
Now, Jason, at the end of that last episode, he asked a very poignant question. Why is it that the first real degree, the Zealotor, in the Golden Dawn, is not referred to as the first degree, but rather as the first degree equals 10th degree?
And yes, why did I ask that question?
I told him it was because of a little something known as Kabbalah. I'm pretty sure that's the right way to pronounce it. I've watched a lot of videos at this point.
Maybe. Now, I do not know.
We could and should spend the rest of our natural born lives talking about Kabbalah.
Which I feel like is going to be an hour and 20 minutes.
And ideally, we'll be dead by the end of it. I agree. That's how fast coronavirus works.
Can you stop that?
Except it's not. All right.
Can you... Cut it out.
All right, I'll cut it out. No more coronavirus talk. Maybe. We have to be topical. Jason doesn't want to be topical. And even if we spent our entire lives talking about Kabbalah or Kabbalah, I'm probably going to go switching between those two pronunciations.
Right, just to cover your bases?
Yeah, sure. Or because I'm an idiot who can't remember which one I said last.
Right, so Crowley.
Crowley, yeah. Yeah. We still wouldn't understand it. And that's on purpose. See, I've read books about this, and I still don't really understand it.
Is it like unraveling the mysteries of the universe?
It is. It is, actually. What is further complicated, though, is that Kabbalah with a K is different from Kabbalah with a Q and Kabbalah with a C. You see, Kabbalah with a Q is Hermetic Kabbalah. Kabbalah with a K is Jewish Kabbalah. And Kabbalah with a C is Christian Kabbalah.
So from the notes, I see it's the Jewish version.
Yes. But it's probably not. Honestly, the way that Crowley and his pals use it is most likely more of the Hermetic way.
With the Q.
However, I'm just going to lay out how these basic tenets work, because I do think they're very important and interesting. If you don't, I don't care. You're the one who said you'd do this podcast. Thank you.
Oh, younger me. Ignorant.
Three
the world.
Years ago. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Now, Kabbalah has a direct influence not only on Aleister Crowley and the Golden Dawn, but on all of Western mysticism. According to the Rabbi David A. Cooper, in his book God is a Verb, Kabbalah and the Practice of Mystical Judaism, quote, I have that if anyone wants to borrow it, quote, Kabbalah is interested in the esoteric nature of creation. What is God? How did creation occur? What are the hidden meanings of the teaching of the Torah? What is the architecture of the cosmos? What is ultimate truth? Things are more than we think they are. The world is a reflection of and in symbiotic relationship with other realms of reality, unquote. Now, you may recognize
quite this. Vague.
It is quite vague because there is no easy watered down version to give you.
Why not?
But you may notice at the heart of this, especially that last little bit, that there is some similarity with the idea of the Emerald Tablet of Hermes Trismegistus. I'm sure you all remember him. It always
comes back to alchemy.
It always comes back to that winged foot son of a gun. In that, as above, so below. That's because Hermeticism grew up in the light of Kabbalah, and the two were in dialogue during their development for centuries. Now, while traditional Kabbalah doesn't necessarily gain much from Hermeticism, Hermeticism takes from it and again becomes Kabbalah with a Q. The understanding of Kabbalah requires an understanding of the Hebrew alphabet, not only in order to read the Kabbalistic texts, but also in order to understand their deeper meanings. See, the Hebrew alphabet is, in Kabbalah, charged with mystical power. Thus, some of the most famous and influential Hermeticists, including Rosicrucians, took Hebrew names, like Eliphas Levi, who was born Alphonse Louis, who was one of the most foundational figures of ceremonial magic. Now, the Hebrew alphabet is made up of 22 different symbols, which all correspond to a consonantal sound. Hebrew does not have separate symbols for vowels, but those sounds are rather indicated by what are called nakid, or vowel pointers. While comprehension of the... What?
I just imagined just a kid pointing out vowels.
There.
Thanks, Vanna.
There. It's
Can
an
I get
e.
an A?
It's an E. There. No, it's actually a very fascinating way of doing it, because Hebrew in like the biblical era when the Bible was being written, and then like in the Talmud and stuff, the vowel pointers didn't exist. They were literally just consonants, and you would just have to know what vowels go in between them. And so then in the 10th century, with what's known as the Masoretic text, those are the people who are like, you know what? That might be a little hard for some people. Let's put all these little dots all over the place and get people figuring out what's going on. It's pretty wild. It's pretty cool, though. I think it's neat. They were developed specifically so that you could go to a manuscript that was already there and add them.
Ah.
Yeah. So.
Makes sense.
Good. Good. Now, the comprehension of the alphabet is important. However, the real crowning glory of Kabbalah is the Tree of Life, or the Ten Sephirot, which we've mentioned a few times already. The Sephirot are foundational to Kabbalah and have followed it through all of its different forms throughout the centuries, due to their centrality to the practice. The Sephirot are 10... Okay, here we go. There are 10 attributes of Ein Sof.
So is this like 1 equals 10th degree? Does that make sense? Like, are they referring to that structure?
Was yes. Degrees? Yes, okay. They are absolutely referring to the Tree of Life, the 10 Sephirot.
Following. Okay, yes. Cool. Go.
So these 10 Sephirot are the attributes, 10 different attributes of what is known as Ein Sof. They are emanations from Ein Sof. Now, Ein Sof literally means infinite. It means without end. It is God, but it is also what we can understand as self-existence or independent existence. Of course, as we all know, none of us actually exist in any fundamental way. We are all dependent on other things, whether it is dependency on food and shelter, or dependency on specific attributes of our personality in order to think of ourselves as we think of ourselves. And yet none of those have any sort of basis of self-existence. They're all conditioned by something else. Does that make sense?
I think I'm following.
Okay. So Ein Sof is the only thing in the world, because it is the world, because it's everything, that exists independent of anything else. This is quite basically what people mean when they refer to God. However, Ein Sof is different from God because God is our limited understanding of a limitless being. So that's the difference between calling something Ein Sof, which is like the ocean of eternity, and God, which is our personalization and characterization of this force and thing.
Okay. And?
Okay, all right. Just want to make sure. Now, Ein Sof Before God created the universe, God was all that was. Thus, when God created the universe for the first time, there had to be something that God was not. The limitless had to become limited. This limitation of limitlessness, which is the birth of time from eternity, required the unimagined to become something. Thus, the emergence of the Sephirot from Ein Sof is a way of Hashem, which is basically a Hebrew word for God, Hashem emerging from Ein Sof. This is performed by a process known as Zinsum, which means contraction. So you have infinity that then contracts and creates a vacuum, a space for something else to exist. That's Zinsum. That's what happens at the very beginning of the universe. Now, these contractions end at the end of all things with 10 different emanations, 10 different characteristics, which are arranged in a specific pattern in order to demonstrate the path of creation as well as a path of ascension. So here we have the idea of 1 equals 10. The tree of life, you are moving up it and God is moving down it. So when you are at the first level, God is at the 10th level. When you are at the second level, God is at the 9th level. 3rd, 7th, 6th, or 4, 6, 5, 5, right. And then they inverse. And you begin, as you enter the vault of the adepts, passing the 5th level, you then begin an ascent directly towards the top of the trees, the top of the tree to the 10th degree, which obtaining such degree would essentially make you God.
So this is a skill tree.
No.
Sounds like
not at all.
Leveling up.
No. Well, that's
obtaining
how
powers?
That's how the Golden Dawn uses it. That's how the Hermetics use it. It is
right.
Not how it is.
Yeah, but
for theoretically,
what we're
yes.
covering, yeah. It,
theoretically, kind of.
It's a skill tree.
I hate it a lot that you would even say that. Now, I'll put this in the notes so you can all see the Sephirot. At the top of the tree, we have Ein Sof. Which,
wait, is the Kabbalah's tree of life, with Kabbalah being with a Q, is that different at all or exact same?
No, the Sephirot are universal to the different ways. And that's where
okay.
I was saying it's made its way through all of it because it's
okay.
so, it cannot exist without
it. I wasn't
this.
Sure if you meant like the concept of it or
yep.
literally carbon copy.
No, and what's interesting is we'll talk about later is that Crowley, in developing his magical system, actually created an inversion of this, wherein you have basically 10 negative attributes that balance out these attributes here.
Interesting.
And so, like, you do have that, but you still, this always exists. So, at the very top of the tree, we
so
see...
Why does God have to descend as you ascend?
Well, it's the idea that as in the Golden Dawn, that as you ascend, you are gaining in power, and so that at a certain point, that which you thought of as God is powerless because you are all powerful. So as you grow in power, God loses
diminishes.
Power because you are becoming self-existing, independent without God.
Okay. Yep.
All right.
Following.
At the very top of the tree, we have Ein Sof. He's actually above. He's off the tree. Above or below him, the very first step of creation and the very first Sephirot is called Keter, which is the crown Sephirot. From there, the energy of Ein Sof is channeled through 32 different paths, moving through every Sephirot until finally it comes to the bottom of the tree, which is Malkut, or kingdom, sovereignty. In Kabbalah, Malkut is everything around us. It is this world. So basically, you have the energy of God that is filtered through 10 different vessels, which is what Sephirot literally translates to, until those 10 or those 9 vessels then flood and fill this vessel, which is the one that we're in. It's the only physical one. It then, to make it more interesting, overlaps because that which is true here about the macrocosm is also true about the microcosm, which is exactly the entire point of how Kabbalah gets used on a personal level or a hermetic level. is the idea that by using these, you can ascend into different kinds of consciousness. Kabbalah is also very, very big in, like Madonna did it. I don't know if probably somebody remembers this. Madonna did it, and like basically their whole thing was like, you can visualize a car by using Kabbalah, and you'll get it, which is disgusting. Now, the Keter Sephira, as well as the Chokhmah Sephira, which is the second or the ninth Sephira, Keter is crown, Chokhmah is wisdom. Those then flow into Bina, which is understanding. Keter and Chokhmah are not able to be thought of or accessed by human beings. Bina is the very limit of what we can know because it represents understanding itself. So you have Keter, which is the limiting of God. Then you have Chokhmah, which is the origination of wisdom. And then you have Bina, which is understanding. And understanding in this case is using and applying wisdom. Wisdom is like the raw resource, which is why we cannot see past understanding into wisdom itself. Once you get past those, you have Gevara, which is justice, Hesed, which is love, Tiferet, which is beauty, Hod, which is splendor, Netzah, which is victory, Yesod, which is foundation, and Malkut, which is kingdom, and again, this reality here, or the very first degree, 1 equals 10. Now, the Keter Sephira, the other thing about the Sephira and the Tree of Life is that they are shaped like a man. And I'll also link this in the show notes as well. Keter, Chokhmah, and Bina are above the human body, whereas the other Sephirot are making up like the shoulders, the arms, and the head, the chest, the groin, and the feet. So basically, it is the image of the universe and it is the image of a man. Now, the tree is split up into three different paths. You have the left path of judgment, the right path of mercy, and the middle path, which is the mitigating force, which keeps the other two forces in check. Thus, as we move down the tree, again, you have chesed, which is directly opposed by gavura. You have love, which is opposed by justice. But these are reconciled through compassion, tiferet. It is compassion which moves love to action, to give of itself, but it is also compassion which moves justice to act mercifully to others. And then finally, again, at the very bottom, we have Malkut, which is kingdom. It is also known as Shekinah, which is the feminine aspect and the actual presence of God in the real world. The seven lower Sephirot represent our typical conscience. They're the ways that we can interact with other people. They're the attributes of God that are in our lives and that we are able to use. They basically constitute our souls. Now, the three top Sephirot represent a different kind of consciousness. Like we said, we can't access them. You can see the edge of Bina, but you can't actually enter into it. Those are the really like godlike places that constitute the upper levels of reality, and especially within the Golden Dawn itself. These 10 steps also manifest as gates. While they are attributes and emanations, they also represent areas, places to be passed through and to be existing. The Holy One limited himself, God's self, in creation and passed through these gates until he arrived at the very bottom level. We begin at the very bottom level, Malkut, and then we ascend towards the very highest level. Again, there are 22 different pathways through these gates, each one of them corresponding to one letter of the Hebrew alphabet. In addition to being thought of as a tree system, or as a ladder, basically, the Sephirot can also be conceptualized as 10 concentric rings, with a single point of darkness surrounding a single point of light in the middle, and a channel through them. It was said in the beginning that Ein Sof withdrew itself and created a hollow, into which a single narrow beam of light flowed until the hollow was full. This light, the combination of all 10 Sephirot, thus became the primary Sephira, Keter, formed that which Ein Sof had resolved to create in his own image, which is the heavenly man, Adam Kadam. this was a being who was the size of the universe because he was the entire universe at that point. He contained within himself all things. He was united with Ein Sof there, and then he himself became limited. Through this limitation, all of reality, including the Sephiroth, were limited and diverged. Once this happened, God ceased to emanate and then began to create. So all of these processes happened before the very first chapter of the very first word of the first chapter in Genesis, which in Hebrew is Bereshit, in beginning. So this is all before that, before the beginning.
I mean, I'm fine. I'm here.
Yeah.
What happened? So do you have to exemplify these attributes before passing through the gates and thus ascending?
Well, you don't. Like, yes, yeah, but there's no gatekeeper. The gatekeeper is...
There's no one in the Golden Dawn.
Yes. No, in the Golden Dawn, this is all entirely just metaphorical. None, like, the actual attributes themselves, like kindness... You don't get, like, tested on kindness. You don't get tested on compassion and beauty. They just used it as a numbering system, basically.
So the last 15 minutes.
It's important because it does represent, again, the magical system of the Dawn, their way of drawing the theurgical powers, as well as it will be very important in Crowley's own system of magic, Thelema, which we'll cover in, I don't know, like 6 more episodes? Who knows?
Okay.
All right. We're just about there. Now, again, you had Adam Kadam. He was the universe. He fell, and the light that he was became fragmented. It became separated, and it became concealed. These sparks of light constitute every living person, every living soul, which once made up all things before the limiting and the limiting and the limiting. And at the end of all things, every spark will be reclaimed and reconfigured into Adam Kadam. This leads to the final tenet of Kabbalah, which, like I mentioned at the very first, is that of as above, so below, the macrocosm and the microcosm. While the 10 Sephiroth describe the creation of the universe, it also describes the reality of man. These 10 attributes which are woven into the reality of the universe also creates us, men and women. The entirety of that reality was contained within the Adam Kadam and now is contained within us. And although the highest 3 Sephiroth may not be able to be thought of correctly or understood, they can be experienced through a different kind of understanding. I mentioned this an episode or two ago, that the goal of all of these mystical contemplations, all of these traditions, whether they be the Rosencrantz found, the Sufi mystics, the Kabbalists, the Christian mystics, even things like the Golden Dawn and other systems that take this and kind of twist it for their own stuff, it is not the knowledge of God, but the experience of God that they are searching for. So that's just the tiniest little bit of Kabbalah. I could have talked a lot longer. Jason over here wants to kill me, so I'm not going to do any more. Jason, anything to say about all that? Any questions,
no,
concerns?
I already brought them up.
You already brought them up as we went. All right. So again.
So where's Alistair?
Again. Where is he? We lost him.
Where in the world is Crowley?
Where in the world is Alistair Crowley? This was the point. I also referenced this a few episodes ago where in all caps I typed, can we please just talk about Alistair Crowley and stop contextualizing for the love of God? So here we are. Back to the story. We've given you a lot of context. Keep it with you. Go from there. Let me know if you want me to tell you more about Kabbalah later. We're not going to do it now.
I blacked out a little bit there.
I know you did. And okay. You'll black out even worse if we actually do talk about it, because it is so amazing and intense and intricate. It's astounding. It's astounding. I love it. Now, Crowley, as he entered the Golden Dawn, as you might expect, being as he already knew everything, very, very, very quickly ascended all of the 4 initial levels. So...
Wow. He did it.
He did it.
He did so many things.
He made it. He went from 0 degrees equals 0 degrees to 4 degrees equals 6 degrees extremely quickly.
Change his name every time he switched degrees.
No, no, no. You don't change your time every time. You don't change your name every time you switch degrees. You change it when you move from the inner order, the outer order, to the inner order.
Ah, so yes. He's coming up on it.
Yes, he's coming. Exactly. He's coming up on it. He attained the rank of Zealoter. Let me see. He attained it within a month. Then the next one, which is Theocritus, within another month. And then the penultimate level of the Outer Order Practicus in February. And the final grade of the First Order Philosophus, which required a 3-month waiting period.
They're like, oh man, guys, he's going through this too quick. We got to slow him down.
Well, they had done it.
He's going to realize we're hoaxes.
They had done it before Crowley got into the order. But yes. So yes, once you reached that degree.
Stop.
Once you reached the penultimate degree, you then had to wait at least 3 months before you could sit for your exams, basically, for philosophus. Then, after you become a philosophus, you have to wait 7 more months before you can even be invited to join the next level up, the inner order. So, Crowley chilled out. He didn't have anywhere else to go but up at this point. And unfortunately, he couldn't even go there. By all accounts, like we mentioned, he was extremely unimpressed with the 4 degrees additional to the neophyte that he had attained. Both Jones and Baker continued to implore him to just please stick with it. But all of these papers were things that he already knew. Like we said, the Hebrew alphabet, alchemy, numerology, astrology. He had already mastered it before his even initial initiation, and thus referred to this all as simply childish trivia that was of no use to him. So he was motoring, losing interest in the Golden Dawn.
Sounds like it's time to go climbing.
You'd think.
Expedition.
Not yet. Maybe it would have been better if he had.
Right?
But unfortunately, he didn't. He just stuck around and did nothing.
Shame.
I know that feeling. Now, he was just hanging out. He was losing interest and faith in the Golden Dawn day by day until he met his next in a line of instructors delivered by the secret chiefs directly. That man was Alan Bennett, who Crowley stated was, quote, a mind pure, piercing, and profound beyond any other in my experience. Which is a lot for Crowley to say, because usually he talks about people that he met in the Golden Dawn like they were idiots.
Right.
Because he thought everyone other than himself was an idiot.
Pretty much. Except for that one dude. That one time.
Baker, yeah.
Yeah,
Baker he writes fondly of. Jones, I don't think he writes too fondly of. I don't think he really cares. And then Bennett, he frickin' loves Alan Bennett. And you will too. See, Bennett was essentially the second, or at least most powerful magically, in command of the Golden Dawn, or the third in command if you count the secret chiefs, which I don't, because they're made up. Crowley claims...
And the rest of this is real.
All of it's real, other than the very nexus of it.
That doesn't make it illegitimate whatsoever.
No, it doesn't.
It's fine.
Crowley claims that he became aware of an extremely powerful magical presence sitting in the same room as him. Before...
I sense it.
It's here. The quickening. It's not the quickening. I love Highlander. He's like doing this ritual. I don't know which one. He's doing some crap ceremony that he hates and thinks is childish. And he does. His spidey senses tingle. And he's like, oh my gosh. He's here. Somewhere he's here. Now, Bennett, after this ritual, walks directly up to him and stares at him with eyes that pierce his very soul and say, little brother, you have been meddling with Goetia, I think is how you say it. Goetia, I think is not how you say it. G-O-E-T-I-A. It's basically black magic is what he's been meddling with. Now, you'll remember, well, you'll remember that Crowley pledged not to do black magic.
Ooh, sword time. Time to become a slasher.
Time to get your head chopped off by the one who stands between the pillars. Yes. No, it wasn't as...
Yeah. The aristocracy don't have it in them.
No, they don't. They can't get their hands dirty. That's why they have us.
The lowborns?
The lowborn, the commoners. We're the real peasants. No, we're not. There's actual peasants out there. I'm sorry for saying that. In any case, it wasn't that strict. Because as you might be able to tell, I don't think they were very actually being honest with themselves about the we're not going to do black magic thing. I think they all knew they were going to do
it's all black magic.
It's all black magic from here, baby. So, again, Goetia is black magic. It is the magical work which deals with the conjuration of demons or dark forces. Crowley was astounded, unsure how this individual could know about his work, which was, of course, the operation of Abramelin the Mage. Crowley would later learn that in Bennett's youth, he had witnessed a satanic conjuring, which had frightened him terribly, as you might imagine.
Why didn't we cover that?
Yeah.
Which one was that?
There's nothing to it.
Oh.
I don't think that they ever said what was conjured or who saw what or where. It just made Bennett into like a bedwetter for years.
Yep.
Poor guy.
Okay, then.
Poor little dude. Now, Alan was a very powerful mage, but not powerful enough to, like, have a house.
What?
He was basically living in squalor and slumming it with different members of the order. And so it came time for Crowley, who recognized this man's supreme magical power on sight, to invite Bennett into his pocket to sit there next to Eminem, who at this point had gotten mushy and weird from the heat. Bennett was invited to live in Crowley's home, which he had rented out for his magical practices. And speaking of that house, Crowley had a whole lot of hijinks that took place there. He kept an articulated skeleton standing on its hands in a cabinet. He fed it blood and small bones in order to try to bring it to life.
How do you feed it?
I don't know.
Do you move its jaw for it too?
I think so. Bennett.
And it was upside down.
It was on its hands.
Weird.
Yeah.
It's not like doing a push up, but it's literally standing
it's
upside
on
down.
Its. Yeah.
Okay then.
And that's what Crowley liked to do in his free time. Where he got the blood? I don't know. I don't particularly care to know. Bennett
Fair
doesn't
enough.
Know either. Bennett was real sick. So he was very powerful, but not powerful enough to have a house, and he was dying. So, of course, what did Crowley do?
He's not connected to this worldly plane.
No, he's just passing through. Crowley conjured a demon.
Nice, as one does.
Even though, again, Bennett was like psychologically traumatized by a previous demonic conjuration, Crowley conjured a demon.
So what's another?
In order to try to heal this man.
Oh, no. It kills him, doesn't it?
It doesn't kill him.
Oh.
Unfortunately, it doesn't really do anything whatsoever. See, he claims that he succeeded in bringing forth a helmet and a left leg and then realized everything was going very wrong because that's not what he was trying to summon anyway.
A helmet and a leg?
It shouldn't. Whatever it was he was trying to summon shouldn't have been wearing a helmet. And so he got real freaked out and stopped the conjuration.
Right. It should be arms out first, right?
You fall.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Something like that. Now, through his operations, he conjured a number of dark forces to try to help Bennett. And with Bennett's help, he bound these dark forces to talismans. It's kind of romantic in a way. Like this guy who's like, my friend or lover or whatever is dying. I have to conjure all the forces of the universe to make him well again. And they're like working together. It's like a good, like, crappy novel premise.
Or you just go to the hospital.
Nah. You know what they do there? They just give you opium and send you home. Just like these days.
Sounds good to me.
According to Crowley's memoirs.
What are you referring to, Sam?
I'm talking about the opioid crisis.
Sam.
It's bad, people.
Yeah. And there's no one's taking credit. Or, I guess, being held responsible.
Yep.
Which is horrible.
Because that's what happens when things happen to this country. No one gets blamed other than the people who are affected by it and suffering. So there's that.
Anyway.
Dark magic!
Other dark forces.
Not darker forces, but other dark forces. See, Crowley claims that through all of these operations, he essentially haunted his own house. As you do. There would be shadowy figures that appeared. There would be furniture, moving, slamming. He claims that when he eventually left the apartment, nobody would rent it because of the darkness they felt inside it, and not because of the upside-down skeleton filled with blood and small bones.
That seems like darkness.
It is quite dark.
But how did it... Yeah. Never mind.
Are I'm you not, still just I'm wondering gonna, how he fed the upside down skeleton?
I'm confused, like, how the little bones didn't just, like, fall out.
Me too. I'm not convinced that they did.
I mean, you've seen the cartoons where the skeleton takes a drink of water and just, like, pours, like, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean. Drink some wine and just
rolls out of the ribs. Well, maybe that's why he's upside down.
So it gets stuck in what? His head. His top jaw?
No, in his head.
The only hole there is the connection to the spinal cord.
What about in his vertebra. Brain cavity?
I mean, again, the only hole up to that is either through the eye sockets or...
Yeah.
Okay.
So you put the blood in through the mouth, and then it like stays there, and then it filters it up.
Eventually pools.
Down into the brain.
Lovely.
Maybe that's what he was going for.
I don't know. Who can truly understand the inner workings of the mind of a dark prophet?
Not me.
Yeah.
Nor him. Not you either. Like, I trust you and love you, listener, but you probably don't understand either. If you do, and this is fair for everything that we talk about in this series, let us know. I wouldn't mind.
Everything we're going through is probably very mundane to you.
Yeah, you're probably like, yeah, we know all this, which is fair. Of all of the things that Bennett taught him, however, maybe none was so influential on Crowley's life as the potential for mind-altering substances to enhance one's magical power.
Naturally.
I wonder why.
Seeing things.
You take a lot of drugs, suddenly you're really good at magic. Wow. Bennett was a frequent user of cocaine.
It opens the doors, Sam.
The doors of
widens
perception.
Widens the mind. Your head looks big. That's what it does.
Bennett would frequently take cocaine, just like Sherlock Holmes.
Naturally.
And even dosed himself with chloroform. Just
that's a little weird.
Just to do it, I guess. However, despite all their fun, sexy, satanic hijinks.
Are we sure it's sexy?
I'm not sure. I didn't.
Okay.
You just assumed? I was like, of all of this, not to like underrepresent people. I don't want that. But of all of this, I think that his sex life is the least interesting part. Maybe it's not. At this point, later on, his sex life becomes inextricably bound up with the magic itself. And so we're just going to have to make it through that. I'm sorry. Anyway, maybe we shouldn't do this series. Maybe we should scrap it and I can talk about Bat Squatch and we could figure something else for next week.
No, I've already been sitting here for the grand total of
4 hours and 10 minutes. Well, but then there was that other hour that we lost an hour yesterday, too, because of that episode that didn't record. So, yeah, about 6 hours, 5 hours. Fun. Bennett had to move out in order to seek a place, again, just like before with young Crowley, a place with better weather so he didn't die, because that was really your only option at that point. Hope that the mountain air cures you or something. The demons did nothing to help this condition. Therefore, he simply
had to
leave.
Okay.
Crowley scammed a woman out of $100.
What?
Yep.
Wasn't he loaded?
He was loaded. And yet, he scammed a woman out of $100 to send him on a boat, I think it was to India. And goodbye, Bennett. Fare thee well, my friend, on your journey to the Raj.
Why are you looking over there?
I don't know, because that's where India is. It's not, though. I don't know what direction anything is.
It's fair.
I don't know where I am right now. After this, and his best friend... After his best friend left, Crowley got more involved in politics, as you might imagine.
Wait, he did not continue to get into the inner circle? No, this is still in that 7-month waiting
period. He's still waiting. Yes, exactly. Ah. And he's going crazy at this point. See, before, he and Bennett were like doing all sorts of fun stuff. They were conjuring demons. They were taking chloroform. It was awesome.
They were feeding an upside down skeleton.
It was great. Now, the fun
times.
Just,
you know, boy stuff.
Yeah. Now the fun times have ended and Crowley has nothing to do, so he just gets political. Specifically political about and in the Order. Again, he's bankrolling Mathers. He buys the copyright for his translation of the Book of Abramelin. He works as Mathers' official representative on behalf of creditors and finances other translations of other medieval grimoires during this time, just ingratiating himself and making himself completely unable, completely indispensable to Eminem, who, again, mushy and in the pocket. The Order, at this point, had begun to split, due mainly to Eminem's ouster that had placed him as the only link to the secret chiefs, removing some of the most important members of the Order who had opposed him. Power struggles began to break out, and Yeats, along with a man named Frederick Le Gardner...
Did he leave?
Huh?
Did he yeet?
He yeeted. He yeeted the Order of the Golden Dawn. He didn't, actually. He will, though, soon. Yeats and Frederick Le Gardner, a financier of the Order whose debts were not getting repaid, were on one side. Eminem and Crowley were on the other side. During this period as well, in November of 99, Crowley moved to the Bolskine House, which is on the shores of sunny Loch Ness.
Not sunny.
Not sunny Loch Ness in Scotland, which we'll return to shortly. Crowley's move was prompted by a number of things. For one, the drama with the Order. However, another more pressing reason was the rumor that his flat was under observance by the police, either due to that him literally saying he was a Russian during a time of high tension between the Great Britain and the Russia. I don't know why I said it like that.
Because you've descended into madness.
Yep. Or because ever since college, there were wild rumors of him being a homosexual, which of course was illegal at the time. And the rumors weren't wild at all. They were completely true. And it was just starting to get back to the police. And so they were sitting there pretty much just waiting to arrest him.
Slip up.
Because that's how it used to be. Oh, my gosh. Now, whether this is the fleeing of Scotland Yard or the distancing from malevolent supernatural powers, Crowley arrived at Bolskine in November of 99, on the doorstep of the new century, foreshadowing new ventures of exploration and magical adventure. And in doing so, he acquired for himself a title, the Laird of Bolskine. So he finally became an aristocrat, and his whole life was realized, all of his dreams. He purchased the house and its title for twice its market value, as the owner was simply not interested in selling until they were offered twice the home's market value.
Makes sense.
Yes. Have you ever had that dream of like doing that? Of like showing up at the house where you grew up and being like, I'll pay you whatever you want. Leave my house. You've never thought about that?
Because my parents still live in that home.
Oh, well, that's fair. You've never thought about going to your father and saying, I'll pay you whatever you want. Get out of my house.
Nope.
I had that.
Too big of a yard, Mo.
There you go.
Mowed it for years. I'm done.
Can't catch him. He's not going back. I had that dream. And so one day when I was in Kaiser, Oregon, which is where I was born, visiting my parents who had moved back there for a minute, I walked to that old house also to show Katie, like, this is where I grew up. And I, even as I was going, as you all might have gathered, I have a significant amount of social anxiety. And yet I had like worked up the courage to knock on the door and say, hi, I used to live here. Like, would you mind if I took a look? Even talking about it? I can't even talk about this without like my anxiety flaring up at the idea of doing this. And yet I was going to. And then I rounded the corner and I saw that the house looked pretty shabby.
Oh, no.
And I went up to the house, and I saw it's condemned. And my childhood home has probably been torn down. And that's really just a metaphor for all of it, isn't it?
Sam.
Hmm.
Crowley.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Okay. All right. I'm back. Now, the reason that Crowley simply had to have Bolskine was that it fit the exact requirements for a location that was adequate to perform the operation of Abramelin. So Crowley was looking forward to a successful magical future. He had finished his months of waiting and was ready to undergo the ceremony of the portal of the Vault of the Adept.
Whoa.
That's a lot of ofs. The portal symbolized the crossing from the Outer Order of the Golden Dawn into the Inner Order of the Ruby Rose and Golden Cross, the first grade of which, the first grade of which, 5 degrees equals 5 degrees, is labeled Adeptus Minor. Now, as we mentioned, Crowley had obtained this previous degree, the 4 equals 6, 7 months previous. He had been in hiding this entire time. He should have been a shoo-in for the portal ceremony. He had been tutored privately by one of the most powerful magicians of his time. He's basically Harry Potter at this point. And he also, in this analogy, owns Dumbledore. And yet, when it came time for him to move into the inner circle, he was absolutely flabbergasted to find that he was barred from entry into the inner order. See, it turned out that his political dabbling had cost him dearly, and his opponents, Yeats and Gardner, who he would curse until his dying day, had seized control of the London Temple, as Mathers was still in Paris, and were acting in insubordination. Insubordination. One time my brother got sent to the office for insubordination, and we thought it was the coolest word we'd ever heard, and so we just said insubordination over and over and over and over. My dad wasn't very happy.
Ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah. My parents weren't jacked, but I learned a new word that day, and that's always a good day. The day when you learn a new word.
Nerd.
Now, Crowley traveled to Paris so that he could be initiated by Mathers personally in order to make the grade. And once he did, he constituted the straw that broke the camel's back. See, that happened on January 23rd. Within a few days, Crowley would burst into the London Temple and demand the papers that he was now entitled to. On the 16th of February, the head of the Isis Urania Temple in London, Florence Farr, resigned. She had been Mathers' direct representative in the United Kingdom. Mathers responded by claiming that Westcott was a liar who had forged all of the documents that were the very foundation of the order itself, and that Anna Sprengel was also a lie. The only source of information that was keeping the entire order going was Mathers' own link with the secret chiefs. That's right, everybody else was lying, but I'm not.
Which means if he's the only link, he cannot be ousted.
Exactly. Otherwise,
He's essential.
Otherwise,
everything just falls
apart.
That's
it. You can't do anything with it. Now, the following month, on March 22nd, the Second Order began discussing replacing Mathers.
He's irreplaceable.
Right.
They can't do that.
Right. I agree. And Eminem agrees. But they don't. Yeats, specifically, really doesn't agree. Two days later, Mathers would officially be disposed. The following day, a letter was drafted by a high-ranking member of the London Temple informing Aleister Crowley that his ordination would not be accepted as to be a current part of the inner circle. You had to have been initiated in the London Temple itself. Now, Crowley was invested by Mathers as his representative to the London Temple in order to smooth everything over and make everything all right again. He undertook this journey on the 13th of April, a Friday. Friday the
best day.
Now, between this day and the beginning of February, much had changed in Crowley's life. As we mentioned, he had purchased the Bolskine House. Around the point that he was sent out, he would have been about halfway through the 6 months of preparation. However, when Mathers reached out to him, he saw that this man and his link to the secret chiefs was more important than the operation of Abramelin ever could be. And so he said, in his own words, that if Mathers wanted him to pause the operation, so be it. It was next to nothing in importance. Plus, it's just kind of fun. It's just kind of fun to be like, I'm the boss now. I'm going to go kick all these people out of the temple. Boom, boom, boom. I'm the boss.
Cool.
You ever do that?
No.
Kick everybody out of the temple? Call yourself the boss.
Nope.
No? All right.
Uh-uh.
All right.
Why
now,
would I ever? I've always been the boss.
Okay.
Continue.
Now, like we said, he's traveling on a Friday the 13th. And as he's traveling, he finds himself under magical attack. Wizard attacks.
Is it like psychic attacks to his mind?
I wish. It was a little bit more than that. Or less than that.
Lightning bolts?
The lamp in the taxi cab that he was in broke. And everything caught on fire. Horses fled before him. Things would spontaneously burst into flame. And a few days later, Crowley was under attack again. He knew this because he was in a very bad mood. Thus, he had to have been under magical attack.
Normally, he's sunny.
He's usually a delight. But on the 16th, everybody agreed that he was a right little terror. And nobody wanted to be around him. And so he
was truly the beast at that point.
He said, I must have been under magical attack.
Naturally.
Just like I was this morning. Now, Crowley arrived.
Yeah, you just had too much fire water last night.
Crowley arrived in London on the 16th in order to reclaim a particularly rare and valuable object, a recreation of the tomb of Christian Rosenkreuz. The tomb was an intricate wood replica, decked out with magical symbols and doused in symbolism. It was an integral part of the initiation into the Inner Order, and the ceremony couldn't be truly completed without it. Crowley was asked to leave, and the police were called, and then there was a very boring legal battle. But basically what happens is the police sided with not Mathers and Crowley that they did not own this building, because guess what? They weren't paying for it. So what? Leave.
How interesting.
Yeah. He was the representative, he said, of the head of the order, the rightful head of the order, even if the order had tried to dispose him. Thus, he occupied the premises for a number of days until the order petitioned the landlord to change the locks, which he did. Crowley was escorted out. The London Order also released a statement claiming that the only legitimate members of the order, like I had mentioned, were those who had been inducted in the temple by other members, thus nullifying Crowley's claim to the Second Order, as well as ending once and for all the matter of Crowley receiving the papers to which he was entitled and for which he had wasted over a year of his life. The entire promise of just keep on doing this crap, it's gonna get better, it's worth it, was taken away from him. And in the aftermath of the failed operation, Yeats quickly rose to the head of the order. However, the order quickly schismed into different parts, all of which would spend a very significant amount of their time focusing on their own right to exist and the truth about how the other magicians were charlatans, but they definitely weren't.
Huh. What does that remind me of?
What? What is it? What does it remind you of, Jason? What is it?
Catholic. Catholicism.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. All right.
Heretics.
Heretics. They were all magical heretics. Now, Crowley's activity in the Golden Dawn would go on to define him and set the stage for the emergence of his own magical order and magical system, the next chapter of his life. But before we look forward, we need to rewind.
So there's not a heist? There's not like breaking into one of the temples and taking the papers?
No. He just... And I don't
change
know why...
Change locks. All right, fine.
Yeah,
they got me.
I don't know why he didn't get the papers while he was there in the temple for a number of days.
Right?
They
probably just didn't exist.
Yeah, probably. Probably. So...
Why didn't Mathers, the one that translated everything, just tell him or write him a copy?
Yeah. These are all very, very, very good questions.
Because Mathers is essentially their prophet, right? He's connection to the hidden chiefs.
Yes, the secret chiefs.
So then why does the temple matter if you have access to Mathers?
Yeah. No, I agree completely.
Okay.
I don't...
Next
Mathers
week
was...
on the Not Alone podcast.
Mathers was a weird guy, and it wouldn't... He probably didn't remember... I would think, because he was just making crap up.
Oh.
Maybe.
He made it up.
Yeah, he made it up. We talked about this already.
Right.
We talked about it. Now, what's interesting is that you, dear listener, or Jason, although I don't think he will, can actually buy or download copies of all of the different initiations and magical rituals and whatnot that were performed in the Golden Dawn. Because later on, Crowley would get involved with a man, I can't remember his name, who basically took all of these papers and published them. And it worked, and everyone was happy. Now, again, there's some question here about how Crowley got everything, and if they're the... Well, the real question is, are they the actual papers, or are they Crowley's, like, interpretation of what the paper should have been? Because that's probably more of what it was. See, it actually... The temple splits into three different parts, basically. After the Dawn splinters, or all of this happens, and Crowley essentially breaks the Golden Dawn. He is not the only thing, but he is the major thing, honestly, that causes this, because he's just an agitator. In 1901, Yeats publishes a pamphlet, which is basically posing the question of if the Second Order, the Inner Order, is actually a legitimate magical order. So this leads to him being the head of the Golden Dawn as we know it at the time. That is actually called, and that one, which is the major force, is called Stella Matutina, which might sound a little bit familiar. It means morning star, and we actually referenced it in our series on...
things.
The Marian apparitions of Fatima.
Right.
It is what the letter... things. Yeah, they are. It is what the letter that was given to the newspapers saying that there was going to be some sort of event the same day that the apparitions of Fatima...
It all comes back around.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It happened at around the same time. See, Yeats and the Stella Matutina... well, now, granted, that happened in, what was it, 1917, but Yeats would remain the head of the Stella Matutina, which remained in operation, therefore, until at least 1921. So, I don't know that this is a valid theory, but it's possible that that signing of Stella Matutina means not that the information was channeled, this is, again, throwing it back to those episodes, not that the information was channeled through and by the devil, or not the devil, or whatever it was we decided that the Morning Star means, but rather that it was this organization working and disseminating this information. So that's pretty interesting. Cool little tie-in. So you have the Stella Matutina. You have also A.E. Waite. Do you remember him? He wrote the book, The Black Magic. What?
I don't know. Book of the Beast?
No, he wrote The Black Magics and Pacts. It was that very first book that got Crowley really interested in magic, and theoretically is what caused him to pursue magic, Rosicrucianism, and all of that. He remained and created just the Isis Urania temple.
Okay,
so you have Stella Matutina, you have the Isis Urania temple, and you have the Alpha et Omega, which I believe is the one that Mathers himself like headed and kept up after this. So you have at least three different splinter groups. Crowley would be closely identified with Mathers for a number of years until things went south between them as well, because again, he hates everyone and everyone hates him. And that's fine.
I kind of understand that.
Do you?
No.
Tell me about
everyone
it.
Everyone loves me.
That is true.
No.
They literally do.
No.
Really? They do.
All right. So anyway, we've got these three groups now.
Mm-hmm.
Are they fighting to illegitimize the others?
They are fighting to illegitimize the others.
Is that like its own...
It's its own thing, and I don't really want to talk about it.
So Mathers and Crowley don't like team up to get rid of the other two, is what I'm getting at. Like they're like,
they
Crowley
all,
himself isn't...
They all write...
Powerful enough to...
Like, how powerful? Like, magical power or, like,
I
political
mean,
power?
Both?
They all write really mean things about each other.
Oh, so they're just slander?
They're just slandering each other.
Interesting.
Yes.
Because I'm sure, like, they know less than savory things about one another.
I'm like, sure.
Do they do this publicly? Like, do I take out an article in the newspaper?
No. No. That's not how magic works. Again, you have the magical people who are different from the actual people.
Right.
And therefore, this was a private affair. No one was, like, running down the street being like, those bastards.
Well, I mean, like, you gotta get more pledges than the rest, right? Like,
theoretically. Or you could just be happy with what you have. That's always my advice.
A millionaire in your pocket. Got it.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
who you just feed fake information to satisfy their hunger for knowledge.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just that.
Seems fine.
After the Order schisms, Crowley no longer really has a part in it. He maybe hangs out around it, hangs out with the people.
So he kind of gave up but he on just, that pursuit.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? This he was just
super into it, got into it, not into it. Broke it to pieces and was like, yeah, I guess I'm done playing with this toy.
Exactly.
Sorry, Mathers. No more money.
No more money. I think I can't remember exactly when their relationship ends and gets cut off. But yes, essentially, at the end of the day, he does not think very well of Mathers. We'll talk more about that in a future episode. Probably not next one, but the one after it, I would think. As he then moves towards what is the crowning achievement of Aleister Crowley's life, which is the development of the magical system of Thelema, or Thelema, or whatever. But we have to look back.
Do we?
We have to ask ourselves something. We have to say, because Jason, you just did it beautifully. Crowley wakes up one day, apropos of nothing, and wants to learn about magic.
Naturally, as
he
one does.
He seeks out a person who would end up being the member of a secret order that he had no idea about, who then tells him to read a book. The information of this book he is talking about, which is then overheard by another member of this order who he had no idea about.
Right, it's fate.
It could be fate.
Or
he gets inducted into the organization. He agitates the organization. Essentially destroys the organization and then does.
Or he's a pawn in a greater scheme?
And then he doesn't even decide.
Samuel.
To stick around to help the organization
that
clean
would,
up.
That would imply that someone is smarter than him.
That is what it would imply.
Which we all know is not true.
You're right. It's probably not true.
It was fate.
It probably was fate. And I'm sure the fact.
It was not orchestrated.
That the Prime Minister of England sponsored his entrance into Cambridge College in order to pursue a life of diplomatic relations, foreign relations. I'm sure that
and then he goes climbing places.
I'm sure that has nothing to do with it. Just as I'm sure that a very mysterious diary message, diary writing, linking to 2 years before his initiation into the Dawn, talking about him being initiated into something called the Order of the Temple.
Why didn't you talk about that more?
I'm sure that has nothing to do with it either.
You've been withholding information in order to sculpt a narrative.
Or the fact,
Sam,
that when he wrote this, it was days after he hurriedly obtained a passport to travel to a place where no passport is needed.
Gotta make it look legit.
You do have to make it look
paper
legit.
Paper trails make it look legit.
Count Shvaroff? Is it possible?
Sounds like you're not far off.
Uh-huh.
I'm done.
Is it possible that Aleister Crowley, whatever his name is, didn't actually give two flying flips about magic, but instead was a domestic agent? A spy working on behalf of the British government to decentralize and destabilize organizations that were linked to anti-government conspiracy? Maybe. And maybe that's exactly what we're going to talk about next week on the Not Alone podcast. Woo! Buddy, you got played. You all got played. And everyone on the earth got played and will continue to get played.
I'm about to have an upside down skeleton in my closet.
Is it me?
Yeah,
oh,
buddy.
No! Yeah, Crowley was a spy, and I'm going to tell you why next week. But before that.
No.
Jason.
Sam.
You got anything you want to say?
I hate all of it.
You hate all of it. You. Oh.
How dare you do this to me?
I'm sorry, bud.
It's not like I read this multiple times knowing that this was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. It's all the illusion, you know. Thank you all for especially sticking through some of those heavier episodes full of context and stuff.
We still haven't summoned any demons.
We haven't summoned any demons, although that part is forthcoming, I promise.
You've been playing me like
I've
a fool.
Been promising that for 4 episodes now.
Yippee.
In any case, I don't think I have anything else other than to say, feel free, if you don't want to wait, if you simply cannot wait for the next step in the story, feel free to head over to patreon.com.
Where you can join our inner circle.
You can join our secret society, as it were.
Not so secret.
It's not so secret, and we don't do any of that, I promise.
Well, he doesn't.
Jason often dresses up in a black robe with the Sword of Judgment. I don't know what he does with it, but he does it. I know that. I know
Judge.
That. You thought this entire time that Jason was talking about Magic the Gathering, a card game. In fact, he was talking about the gathering of magic. He's not actually a science-y guy. He's a magician. It was all fake. Just like
3 years. And you just gave it all away?
Yep. His cover was deep and now it's blown.
Ah!
Anyway, go to Patreon. Help us out. We'd really appreciate it. At this point, by the time you're hearing this, I now live in Washington. So, hello from Washington. I think this will be our first episode that is released after I move. So, everything's about to change.
I'm not ready.
I'm not ready either.
You've only been in my house for like 2 times.
What if I come over every day between now and then? That's like 22 times. No, I'm not promising. I'm saying what if? Then that'll probably be too many times.
No, that would be still not enough.
Oh, that's sweet. Anyway, you can find us on Twitter at Not Alone Podcast. Nope, Not Alone Pod. You can find us on Facebook at Not Alone Podcast or join our Facebook group. Remember, we are Not Alone, a community for the strange. You can follow us on Instagram at Not Alone Pod and find our website, notalonepodcast.com. I'd also encourage you, if you are jonesing for more paranormal spooky stuff, to go check out the Dark Myths Collective, which we are still part of, even though we never talk about it. I don't know why, I'm just lazy. We are part of a group with fantastic other shows, all of which will suit your interests, we guarantee it. Now, Jason.
Samuel.
I did it, no.
No, I said it last
week. You did it
last
week, and by last week we mean an hour ago. I'll say it this week.
You're so brave.
Thanks. Remember, whether you are contemplating the mystery of existence itself, or you are force-feeding blood to an upside-down skeleton, you are
not alone.